Welcome to episode 3 of the Autism Podcast. We hope you're enjoying the podcast so far. In this episode, James Gordon and I talk with Emma Dalmain about all of the community work she does, her views on some of the key issues autistic people face, also her passion for homeschooling, and all of the work she does in relation to fighting back against autism stigma and the promotion of fake and harmful autism cures. We also get to hear about some of the things she would ideally like changing to enable autism acceptance in society. And we learn all about the work that she does in the community with her organization called Autistic Inclusive Meets. We have many more interesting and we hope impactful episodes lined up. We hope to release at least 2 episodes in December. But for now, we bring you episode 3 featuring Emma Dalmain. So, James and I have here Emma Dalmain. Thanks for joining the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Just a quick introduction about Emma. Emma is an autistic advocate. She is a writer, proud mother, and campaigner against fake autism cures. She's the author of It's an Autism Thing, I'll Help You Understand It. And she's also the CEO of Autistic Inclusive Meets. She also created the Aspirations and Autiness Group for Autistics, which is an online community and a lifeline for many members. She also began the Autism Inclusivity Group. That group reaches out to families who feel alone and neglected with the tagline, hashtag we see you. And she is doing all sorts of things, but in particular, she's a very, very strong advocate against all of these quack autism treatments and cures. And she's worked with the Westminster Commission to produce legislation in order to get these things made illegal. So I think that roughly summarizes it. And apologies, there's so many things to say about all of the things that you do, Emma, that it's hard. It's so hard to. You do, because you are. Because all of it is so valuable, and I feel sort of morally wrong for missing any of it.
I can't think of anything, apart from the fact that Autistic Inclusive Meets does 3 weekly groups, and that we support home educators. 3 of our board are home educators, and we have a lot of parents pulling their children out of school due to bullying and just general lack of understanding. That's what I've been doing today and yesterday, is supporting home educators that have been calling, and or prospective ones that are just lost and don't know what to do.
Yeah, that's something else that you're a big advocate of, isn't it? Homeschooling. And you homeschool your is it 2 of your children you homeschool?
Yeah, my 2 youngest.
Okay, so I'll hand over to James for our first question.
Okay, so hi Emma, can you describe your personal journey on how you've come to view autism today?
Yes. My youngest son was the first to be diagnosed. We noticed that he was different, or that the other children were different to him when he started nursery. I don't see him as being different because he's the same as us, so it's our normal. A lot of his behaviours were ones that I had as a child. Still do have some of them. A lot of sensory seeking, a lot of frustration. So through him, I ended up looking at myself and asking for an assessment, and I was diagnosed at age 37. It was around then that I started looking at my other kids and thinking, oh, hold on a minute. So I realised, you know, that at least 5 of them are autistic. And I then opened up the Aspirations and Autiness Facebook group, because as a parent, I'm sure, and you as well, after your child is diagnosed, you're sort of just set adrift, and there's no, unless you go looking for it, there's no offer of community or information or anything. And I found that worldwide, a lot of parents were really very lonely and cut off, and they felt that they couldn't, you know, voice their concerns.
Yeah.
So I opened that group, and it's admined by autistic adults, as is the other one, Autism Inclusivity. And we've got a lot of autistic adults in there that are helping advise parents.
If I can just sort of say something about that, Emma, in that you know, I think you've raised a really crucial issue that we have here in the UK, and I think also globally, in that at the point of diagnosis, there really is nothing in terms of state-provided support.
And for, the rhetoric is so despairing. It's, I'm so sorry to tell you your child is autistic.
Right, yes,
good point.
Right,
and that immediately gives such a negative, you know, it should be just a matter of a fact, you know, right, your child falls on the autistic spectrum, their mind works differently, try this, try that, maybe put this in place, and contact us if you need any more help. Why isn't it like that?
You're spot on correct. And the language that these clinicians use can be very damaging. As you said, you know, you already, you know, it could be that you're completely new to autism, you're vulnerable to the many misconceptions, you're vulnerable to its stigma. And here you've got a professional that you know, see as someone as a means of authority and knowledge, saying some of these things that might reinforce those misconceptions or create new ones. So it just puts parents in an unnecessarily bad situation when in reality, as you said, Emma, it's ultimately just a difference as opposed to anything anything
negative. It's the way
negative.
It's said, your child has autism, which immediately suggests it's external. You know, so with early intervention, you know, we can
stamp it out.
You can help the child develop coping methods and you can put things in place to help the child navigate their environment, but intervention sounds like something you do with an illness or an addiction. It's very negative, all of it. And
you're right.
I feel for them.
Yeah, no, you're right. And as I said, there's nothing in terms of, and as you said, there's nothing in terms of state provided support for parents as well, is there? You know, is it you just sort of given this, you know, this news, and it's couched in this very negative way. And then essentially tell you good luck and off you go without any signposting to any sort of state-provided supports or any, you know...
Even just a referral to a local group where there's other parents and other... Well, you don't ever get a professional saying seek out autistic adults. That would be the best advice that you could possibly give.
I saw on social media recently that somebody suggested, and I thought this is a great idea, that somebody suggested that at the point of diagnosis... there should be an autistic mentor that's assigned. But I think that would be an amazing thing. But like you say, there's nothing that the state formally does except deliver you this news couched in a negative way, and then you're left very vulnerable. And so I just like to credit you again, Emma, with you going through this journey and deciding, you know what, I'm going to do something about it, right? And create these groups and do all these things, which is extraordinary, really, when you think about it, don't you think?
The way I look at it, that when the kids grow up, they need a community around them.
Yeah, absolutely.
They desperately need that. And with the anti-vaccine rhetoric and the whole curist movement, it's not a very nice place to be right now as an autistic person.
No.
So,
absolutely.
Even just going to the shop can be damn hard, you know, with the flashing lights, and because neurotypical people, they won't see those lights beating at 60 beats a minute, but I can see it, and my kids can see it.
Yeah.
So you've got to navigate that in the supermarket. You've got that. You've got the Hertz humming of the freezers. You've got crowds. You've got noise. You've got babies crying. You've got different smells. Yeah, and during all that, you've got to remember to behave appropriately, so-called be appropriately.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You know, and
all these ridiculous social rules.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that part of the problem, though, Emma? The way that society's sort of set up to, in terms of what we value and what we don't value. You know, this point of you have to.
But people scared of what's different.
How do you think we can make a difference in terms of breaking those social values and the idea that difference is bad? How can we make a difference? Because I think it needs to happen, doesn't it?
Yeah, we just need a lot more. Adults speaking out. We need adults going into schools and saying to teachers, well, actually, have you noticed that the light bounces off of there, which can cause distraction, which then can cause frustration. Just putting adults out there so that they can go to with councils, with schools, with workplaces, and just say that this needs to be put in place. Maybe we could tweak this. It's desperately needed. It really is.
So maybe some kind of training program for teachers that include autistic adults.
That would very much help. Have you heard of the Gina Davis Project?
No, I haven't. No,
Mount Autism, I think it's called.
No, not heard of that. No.
No, it's. Well, I've been working on that for the past couple of days. It's where a therapist or a teacher puts a bucket on the floor, and the child has to sit in a chair and watch the teacher play with various toys in front of the child, and the child's not allowed to move. They're not allowed to get up and play with the toy. It's to teach compliance and patience. I've had parents reaching out to me saying, you know, that their child has been melting down, that they're not allowed to get up and comfort the child because it's all about teaching compliance. It's just that there's so many different methods of ABA that's being used that are being named different things. And parents aren't thinking, oh, you know, they hear, oh, you know, we do a game with a bucket and he seems to love it, you know. He seems to love it once he's got hold of the toy, but they don't mention he's been melting down for 15 minutes before he was allowed to move.
I mean, aren't these things just so... They're just so wrong on every level, aren't they? They're so unethical, immoral. And it's all about, as you said, it seems to me that it stems from a need for compliance, that need for
That's what society is all about, though,
isn't
it? Complying, behaving.
Right,
doing what's expected of you.
Sadly, it's just miseducation, isn't it? Just being told that you have to fit in and you have to be a certain way to be accepted.
Schools have such a crucial role, don't they? Because, you know, they send out the messages that our children pick up on, and they're the crucial part of our socialisation.
Well, so, their main goal is to make a child blend in with their neurotypical peers, isn't it? Teachers that I've spoken to have said to me that they're not trained to handle autistic kids. They're given one day's training, and then they're handed a class of 30 kids. At least two or three of them have additional needs. And they are expected to cope. I know people have pushed for inclusion, but so many... It's funny because parents were fighting to get kids out of special needs schools into mainstream in the world of inclusion, but now they're actually fighting to get them back into special needs schools, but are told, oh, your child's not autistic enough, they don't have these needs. So you've got children that are stuck in the middle, that are so-called not autistic enough to be in a SEND school, but are too autistic, too so-called the autistic, to be in a mainstream.
That sort of leads on to the sort of label that we've got with high and low functioning. Can you say a bit about that maybe high functioning?
Yeah,
high functioning
labels are useless. You've got people that communicate with non-verbal communication. Mm. As soon as that happens, they're labelled low functioning. But they could be more intelligent and more articulate on an iPad typing or signing than you and I could ever be. Because of the misconception that verbal speech is everything, they're looked at straight away as low functioning. And the high functioning stamp that they stick on people, you know, those people, just because they're coping or looking like they're coping in society and communicating effectively, you know, probably have a lot of anxiety, and there's a lot of masking going on to be able to achieve that.
Yeah, there's all kinds of sensory issues. There's
That's right.
Dyslexia, dyspraxia, dyscalculia, all these things going on in mainstreams that maybe the teachers don't pick up on.
No, well, because if a child is unable to do the work and, you know, they're embarrassed or they're frustrated, their behaviour will become challenged. I say that way because I've always said challenging behaviour, but if you put it that way, it's that the person is challenging the environment around them and the teachers, and it's not that. The person is being challenged by their environment.
I've heard a lot of parents come to me and they say that their children haven't been able to cope in class, and they've left the classroom and they've gone to the school library, which is a kind of safe haven in a lot of schools. So naturally, instinctively, they're going to the place where they can calm down and be away from the classroom environment, you know, be away from all the stress.
Yeah. My favourite place was the nurse's office. I just used to pretend to be ill to get home from school because of the amount of anxiety that I had there. You know, I wouldn't want to be there. It wouldn't always be because of the other kids. It wouldn't even be because of the teacher. It would be because of the environment, the amount of noise and smells and colours and textures and expectations that, you know, kids are having so much problems fulfilling.
Yeah, and all the rules.
Mm.
Yeah.
They're told, you know, go to school, cope with this, cope with that, mask this way and achieve this.
Otherwise, you're a failure.
Yeah.
Yeah, Otherwise, you're a failure. You failed.
Yeah. And then the teachers come down on the kids and say, why haven't you done the work? And, you know, or why have you left the classroom?
Yeah.
It's such a shame and so saddening and damaging that we have this social obsession with grouping people into success and failure.
Well, there's also the whole misconception about home education. People say, oh, but your child's not socializing, you know, how are they going to make friends? You know, there's no other place apart from school where a group of individuals are all grouped together with their age group and expected to cope. It doesn't happen at work, it doesn't happen anywhere else, does it, where you're put with your exact age group, not really socializing with other ages.
Yeah.
It's very odd. You find that home educated children are actually a lot more confident speaking to adults because they've been around so many different age groups during the day. School, they're told not to talk, and if they do talk to the person that's sitting next to them, they move to someone who they're not friends with so that there's no talking. And yet we're told, you know, socializing takes place in school.
It's an exercise in soul crushing, isn't it? When really they've got a moral obligation to not just educate our children, but to ensure their well-being and mental health is upheld and do it in a compassionate, kind, appropriate way.
Yeah. The thing is, parents aren't told that as soon as they've given birth to their children, you know, once their children are of an age where they start to learn, which is immediately, really, the responsibility of education is the parents. But you're not told that. It's drummed into you, you know, your child's 2, 3, right, put them down for nursery. Oh, you'll be going to nursery soon, won't you, babe? You know, you'll get your days back. And that's what you're told. You know, you're, as far as everybody knows that I've spoken to who didn't know they could pull their kids out legally, they were told your child has to go to school or you'll get fined, you'll get prosecuted, you know, you'll get into trouble. So these parents choose to hand the rights of education over to a school without even realising that they had the option not to.
Well, it's not so much a choice then, isn't it? It's more just a doing what they expect.
They've
is normal.
They've been told it's expected.
Yeah. Right,
yeah. It's so sad. The parents that I've spoken to over the past few days, you know, they've said that their children have been abused in school, they're melting down, they're hitting themselves, you know, they're getting sworn at by other kids, they're getting slapped in the face by other kids. And as soon as I say to them, you know what, the great news is that you don't have to send your son back to school tomorrow. In fact, you don't have to send them back ever again if you don't want to. They're like, oh my God, really? And I won't get into trouble. I'm like, no, you won't.
And can you just sort of, just for people listening that don't know about homeschooling or maybe thinking about it, could you just sort of clarify what the case is, at least in the UK, in terms of accessing additional support, state-funded support, you know, in terms of speech and language therapy and that sort of thing?
Oh, yeah, that's another thing that schools say to parents, you know, if you pull him out, you won't be able to access speech and language, you won't get OT, you won't get music therapy. That's not true. You know, if you pull your child out and you want to access these things, who simply goes to the GP and say, you know, can you refer me to this? Can you refer me to that? A lot of speech and language therapy have drop-in centres in different children's centres. So just look for one of those, pop along to one of those and say, yep, I'd like my child to be taken up by you. It's not as ostracising as people think. The only thing is that you, on the lodge, don't get any help from the local authority financially. You know, it is all self-funded. But there's so much online that's free. You know, the Khan Academy is free. Twinkle do a great, you know, principles, loads of different worksheets that are very interesting for kids because they use cartoons to go into your child's special interests if they've got one. So if your child is interested in Angry Birds, they do a whole line of maths, you know, things like that. There's reading eggs and math seeds. Those are paid for, but those are brilliant. And then there's trips to the museum, trips to the park, you know, it's all educational. Even just going to the shoppers, because they're learning to interact, they're learning to budget, you know, you can allow them to pay so that we're interacting with the shopkeeper.
It's really important, I think, that you're clarifying all of this and addressing some of the misconceptions, because there is a stigma attached to it, isn't there?
Oh, such a stigma. You go, oh, aren't you in school today? And they're like, oh, I'm homeschooled. And people literally rear back like, oh, my God. I've even been asked, is that legal? I'm like, no, it's not. Don't tell anyone, though, will you? Like, just go away.
Yeah, of course, it's completely legal.
No, and it's so easy to do. You literally just, unless your child's in a SEND school, then you have to get the local authority to agree that the school has failed. And that is slightly harder. To pull your child out of a SEND school is slightly harder. But if your child is in the mainstream, you simply put down in an email, dear head teacher's name, I wish to deregister my son from your school. And when you put my son or my daughter, you put their name and their class from your school. Please remove my child's name from your school roll. They will be educated otherwise. And then your name, the date, your address, email it in when the school is closed so it bounces back. You know, no one's in the office because that acts as a receipt, so they can't say they didn't receive it. And you can also print off a copy and drop it into the office, ask for a receipt, and that's it. You don't have to interact with the school again. And they will notify the local authority, so you'll get a call from the home education officer. But you're allowed to de-school for at least a year before any visits. And if you don't want to have a visit, you can communicate by email. If your child's not happy having someone in their house, if you wish to meet the person, you can wish you can meet them in a museum or a library or a local park. So it's great. Not as terrifying as people think it is. And my children, their education is very unstructured because they don't have long attention spans. So I work with their interests. So we do stories, we do short bursts of work. We mainly go out a lot. We go to a lot of museums and parks, and I run the playgroups, and they do football. And so there's loads of different things that they're learning. They do a lot on their iPads. You know, Minecraft is brilliant for learning. It's all preemption, and it's maths, and it's strategizing. And yeah, it's just looking at things in a different way. And parents are so, it's so banged into them that they have to, their children have to do things a certain way. And also, if you want your child to follow the curriculum, there are curriculum packs online that you can buy. As they get older, if you want them to do GCSEs and exams, a lot of education centres and schools are allowing home educated kids to go in and do them there.
Well, thanks for clarifying all that. It's really helpful. I'm sure a lot of people benefit.
No problem. It's one of my passions.
Yeah, no, that's really great. I was wondering if you can tell us a little bit about the campaigns against fake autism cures and why you're so passionate about that. You know, if you could tell the audience.
Yeah, no
a little
problem.
Bit. Yeah.
When I opened Aspirations and Naughtiness, parents were posting, you know, have you seen this terrible treatment? Does it work? You know, so I was having to delete the post straight away because obviously we don't want to promote it. The so-called treatment was chlorine dioxide bleach enemas and using it in oral solutions. And there was a group called CD Autism, which stands for chlorine dioxide. It was run by a woman called Kerry Rivera, who's since opened up another group. You know, as soon as you manage to get one shut down, they open up under a different name within hours, sometimes secret, so you don't know they exist. So I went and had a look, and I wish I'd stayed in that first time, but I was so disgusted by what I saw that I left. But parents were, and still are, putting up pictures of their children's bowel lining that's come out of them, you know, the effects that the bleach is having, and they're told that it's purging, you know, that it's a good thing. If your child is having seizures, if they're having nosebleeds, if they're vomiting, if they've got diarrhea, these are all good things because the autism is leaving them. They're told that parasites are causing their children's autism, ropeworms in particular, which has been proven not to exist. Ropeworms don't exist. It's been medically proven that they don't exist. So the things that are coming out of their children is bowel lining and colon mucosa. And they're sending them off to labs and they're you know, being told, oh no, you know, it's human, it's not ropeworms. And then they're told, oh yeah, there's a conspiracy. They're told not to tell you what it really is because they want your child to remain autistic because therapies are so lucrative and it was the government that made your child autistic in the first place by giving them vaccines. So these parents like go down this plug hole of quackery. And as I said, the language is so important because when they're told your child has autism, I'm so sorry, you know, but early intervention can help. You know, there are things that can lessen the symptoms of autism. All these things, all these words click in, like click, 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 click. So it's, oh, your child has autism, so one day they might not have it. This is what the parents are thinking. The symptoms, oh, we can get rid of the symptoms because that implies illness. And it just compounds the desperation parents feel to help their children. I think a lot of them don't actually necessarily want to cure their children. You know, they believe that they're helping them. They believe that they're lessening the struggles they'll have in life. Obviously, there's some that have a complete and utter sickening hatred of autism, and they believe it's invaded their child, and they you know, they want to purge it from them. Whether it almost kills them or not, they're not bothered about that. So I went into these groups, came out, went back in under fake profiles and started interacting with the people that are using these treatments. And it's not only chlorine dioxide bleach, there's turpentine, there's GC-MAF, which is a banned blood product that works like adrenaline and insulin. If there's too much of it in your body, then it can be fatal. So I started speaking to these parents, interacting with them, asking how much their children were on, you know, asking what the effects were, getting their phone numbers, finding out where they were located, and then reporting them to police and social services. And as you can imagine, that has made me not a very liked person. So I get a lot of death threats and rape threats and, you know, slander and my picture taken and put all over Twitter and emails and things sent to the house and phone calls and reports to social services and to the DSS and just an avalanche of hatred, which can be hard to put up with as an autistic person. But the thing is, these children desperately need someone to be doing what I'm doing.
And you're one of the few people that take action, right? That actually do something.
There are actually a lot of people that are reporting, but they won't come out in the open because, in their words, they don't want the crazy people at their door. But the only way I could raise the awareness that I have and drive it to Parliament was to shame the public and the government so much that they'd be forced to act, because it was all being brushed under the carpet. No one in the UK had spoken out publicly about it. So I was the first to speak on TV about it, the first to be in the paper about it, with MMS, which is Miracle Mineral Solution, which is chlorine dioxide bleach. I was the first to speak out about that in the UK. And since then, you know, there's been a lot of coverage about it. And each time I've managed to report a parent, because it's damn hard to report them, because they're advised to use fake profiles, fake names, fake locations.
Is that what you think, you know, when you're talking through all of this, I was wondering what your thoughts are in terms of solving this or making some progress. Is this your sort of plan at the moment to really push it to the government's agenda and
yeah,
change policy?
They launched the report and they used seven pieces of my work in that report and consulted with me on it. You know, just asking people, have they been offered cures? Have they been, you know, what is it they've been offered? How was it available? Was it available on the internet? Did someone offer to meet them with it? Just to expose the level of quackery that's going on. So they launched the survey, then the report, and now I'm hoping they'll push for legislation, which is what Barry Sherman wants to do, because obviously autism isn't a disease or illness, it's not an injury, but we need something similar to the Cancer Act, because with the Cancer Act, it's illegal to say that you can cure cancer with, I don't know, a bottle of bleach, which is what they're doing with autism. So we need it made that you cannot say that you can cure autism, full stop. Because there is no cure for it.
So what exactly would the legislation look like? What would, in your mind, ideally would be, how would it look? You know, what would be?
I would want it that if you are caught selling, promoting, administering anything with the goal of curing autism, that you would be prosecuted.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'd all want that. I mean,
yeah.
that sounds
yeah.
reasonable.
There's a big difference between lessening the environment, lessening sensory overload, you know, and making it more bearable for a person to exist, basically, you know, to be able to navigate society. There's a big difference between that and talking about curing something that's not an illness or an injury.
In a way, it seems extraordinary that it's not already illegal. You know, I mean, how can such a deplorable...
Oh, you would think so, wouldn't you? But the parents get a visit from social services on the lodge and, you know, oh, we're so desperate. You know, we really need help. You know, this has happened, that has happened. We thought we were helping. They get a slap on the wrist and the next day they're back in the groups complaining that they've been reported and that they've lost a day of being able to give their children their bleach doses.
Beyond legislation, which I think we can all agree would have an enormous effect,
yeah.
do you think, though, that we also need to tackle the root problem, you know, the kind of social attitudes, the stigmatizing attitudes that exist towards autism and autistic people, you know, the idea that it's a bad thing as opposed to a difference, you know, I mean, those
yeah.
kind of root attitudes.
The language is something that needs to change. That's one of the very first things that need to change. Yeah, we need a lot more education out there.
Do you think though that language is a sort of reflection of what we believe, you know, our attitudes and our values, you know, language reflects that. So if our beliefs and our values about something ultimately change, hopefully the language will too. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. Mm. I do. I think the whole anti-vaccine movement hasn't helped at all. You know, because now we've got people that are not vaccinating. We've had that for a long time now. So measles is back, and people are literally saying they'd rather have a dead child than an autistic child. And this is because of the fear and the scaremongering and the misconceptions about autism.
So we really need a sort of anti-stigma campaign, mm-hmm. right? I mean, in the same way
I'm
that...
I'm doing my best. I mean, I wrote the book.
Yeah, no.
I wrote the book to do my best to educate parents, you know, but...
Yeah, you're at the top of the tree on that front. I mean, there's no doubt about that.
I'm trying.
Yeah.
But I did that. We've opened Autistic Inclusive Meets. As I said, we've got 3 weekly groups. We've got autistic volunteers, which the parents, a lot of them, you know, they've come in. And some of them have started crying the minute they've walked in because their child has just run off quite happily and left them. They're like, oh my God, he's never done that before. And it's because he's comfortable. And it's lovely. And they get to speak to adults that have and still display a lot of the same behaviours as their children do. You know, a lot of stimming behaviours and a lot of they can talk to them and it makes them feel empowered. You know, because I don't know what it's like to be a neurotypical parent, but I know that before I was diagnosed, I thought I was one, and I know that I felt quite left out, and I desperately wanted to understand more about what Damien was going through, what he was, what his perception of the world was. And the thing was, I could understand a lot of it, which I shouldn't have been able to, because I thought I didn't know I was autistic. But as a parent who isn't autistic, it must be very bewildering and very scary to think I can never understand my child. I'll never know how they see the world. That must be really unpleasant. So for them to come and, you know, talk to people, see older kids to their kids, because we have teens as well. We go from pre-diagnosis right the way up. So for them to be able to walk in and meet people of all different ages that are autistic, I think is really helpful to them.
Yeah, I think it's amazing, Emma, all the community work that you and your organisations do. Can you tell us any more about the things that your organisations are doing?
Yeah, we've got a Christmas party coming up on the 8th of December in Southeast London. It's all on the website, which is www.autisticinclusivemeets.com. We have a group at Brookhill Children's Centre in Woolwich every Monday, 4 till 6. In January, the times will be changing from 3 till 5, sadly, because they haven't got enough staff to stay late at the Children's Centre. And that's very play-based. That's a lot of a big sensory tray, then another sensory tray, and then there's an outside area for the kids to run around. The parents get tea, coffee, they can sit down, relax, and they can see their children inside and outside. And as I said, the volunteers are at that one. The Thursday one is more aimed at home educators because it's from 12 till 2:30 in the afternoon, and we get a lot of autistic adults coming to that one and a lot of home educated kids. That one is great because there's a lot of room. There's a football pitch, there's a dance studio, an ICT suite, a PlayStation room, there's pool, ping pong, there's just everything. It's a great place. It's a great resource to access, so the kids, you know, are scattered all over the place doing what they want to do. Parents get to, again, relax, and the kids get to mix and socialise. And if they need to take themselves away to a quiet place, the place is definitely big enough for that. What we desperately need is our own building. We need somewhere that's got a big room with an outside area, a sensory area, room, a kitchen to teach life skills, get the kids in there, get them cooking, things like that, and a storage.
Well, if any of our listeners can help Emma with that, then do get in touch with her. So
yeah,
that would be very helpful.
That would be amazing.
Yeah. And lastly, the question I had for you was, do you have any specific messages that you would like to convey to our listeners? You know, what kinds of things do you want them to understand or appreciate?
But autism isn't something to be fought. You don't overcome it. You know, it's not autism, you know, we whipped autism's butt today. It's not, you know, it's not external. So saying that you hate autism means that you actually hate your autistic child because it's not external to them. What you hate is the challenges that autism is presenting, you know, that just to work with your autistic individual, not to try and, not about interventions, it's not about beating autism, it's about including and being inclusive and working with and enhancing and providing sensory opportunities and going at the speed that the child works at is so important. You know, forcing them to go too fast or forcing them to go too slow will just cause so much anxiety and frustration.
And what messages do you have to any autistic listeners who are perhaps feeling very sort of depressed or low or down?
Contact me. Contact us.
Yeah.
That's the best. Yeah. That's all I can say. Contact me.
What would you tell them?
I tell them that society is shit. And I know that, and I do know how they're feeling. I do know what it's like to walk outside and feel like I'm in a play and I haven't got my words scripted, and God, did I do that right? And trying to read people's facial expressions while trying to work out the meaning of their words and maintain eye contact, because we're trained to do that, can be damn hard. And that it's okay to have a cry, and it's okay to walk away if you need to, and it's all right to be kind to yourself. And if you have damaging relationships in your life, that you should try and sever them, because you don't need to put up with being mistreated.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I think we all agree with that. If you had a sort of magic wand, let's say, you know, what kinds of things would you do with it for autism? You know, how would you change society, and how would you make the picture look?
I'd obliterate Andrew Wakefield and the anti-vaccine movement, and autism speaks would go, and the colour blue would go, because that was pushed as... that came about because they believed that there were more boys that were autistic than girls. And that's simply not true. So I get rid of that. I get rid of the puzzle piece. Even though I've got one tattooed on my back, because I didn't know at the time that it was offensive. And I think I'd dull all the sensory invasions I could. So the lights in supermarkets and the noise, I'd just take it down a notch. I think that would really help. Oh, and obviously legislation. Maybe magic ourselves a building. That would be good.
Yeah. Yeah, I think your organisation sounds amazing, and I think it could be the model for the future everywhere. Yeah.
Oh, it'd be lovely. Well, it's owned by autistics, run by autistics, and we also work with Charlton Athletic Football Club. We do a football session every Saturday, so that's ages 5 to 15. Capability and all of that isn't important. It's just about getting out, having fun, getting fit,
it sounds
just
amazing.
Joining in, feeling part of something. It's lovely. It's really lovely to watch, actually. It's really nice. It's nice to see the parents, too, because they're so proud that their kids are, you know, are doing so. Parents just want to feel like they're helping their kids. That's what it is. They just feel, they feel left out and they don't understand. And you've got people, opportunists, who are saying, this will help, that will help, that will help. And, of course, they swallow it up. You know, it's getting the right people out there saying this will help, that will help, that are providing helpful strategies, you know, things that aren't harmful, that are child-led, that are friendly. We need so much more of that.
I absolutely agree. And I just sort of like to sort of say again how extraordinary your work is and the enormous impact that you've had through all of your work, from your charitable work and your community work to the many media pieces of work that you've done trying to get convey
yeah,
the right.
Too many.
So you do all this. You do all of this work.
Unpaid.
Yeah, completely.
Unpaid and voluntary.
Completely
yeah.
Voluntary, and you're a single parent as well.
Yeah, I am a single parent. I've been a single parent for 5.5 years now.
And so you're doing all of this on, you know, much of it on your own, and, you know, homeschooling and doing all these amazing things. Without the state ever having provided you with the strong start.
No, the local council and the local health authority are quite happy to refer kids and adults over to us, so, which I think is really funny. You know,
yeah.
We're getting referrals now. You know, we've made an agreement with the local mental health authority that they will refer any newly diagnosed adults that wish to be supported over to us. We're getting SENCOs calling up and, you know, different schools calling up asking for support with their pupils.
Is that part of the sort of social prescription enterprise?
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm glad that they are. I mean, they couldn't go to anyone better.
It's great that they're doing that, but my only concern is that perhaps, you know, they rely on community, fantastic community services.
Oh, very much, yeah. Not having to spend money and checking a list. All right, yeah. We've reached out to a local authority or a local organisation, so that's a tick on the list. You know, we've made an effort. We've pointed the parent that way, and then there's no backup, if you know what I mean.
It should be.
And there needs to be.
It should be the case that if the local authorities recognise that the charitable and community organisations are making such a tremendous impact to the point that they're socially prescribing them, that therefore they should be spending the money on it themselves. You know, if they recognise that it's impactful.
Oh, you would think so, wouldn't you? No, nothing. And I must just say as well, it's not all me. You know, I've got another 4 wonderful directors that I'd like to thank, if that's all right.
Yeah.
I've got Alex Forshaw, who runs the My Autistic Dance blog. There's Sarah Challenger, who's on our board. She's brilliant. She's a mother of an autistic child, and she does guides and brownies and Amy Bresnahan, who's also a home educating mum. She's recently joined and she's really great. You know, she's very hands-on. And then there's Joanna Tackler, who's a solicitor. She's autistic herself and has autistic kids. So there's five of us that are doing what we're doing.
And what is the best way for people to contact you if they need to?
We're on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram. Our email is autisticinclusivemeets@gmail.com. So you can message the page, you can email in. My phone number, you'll find to put this out because it's everywhere anyway, is 07464-614-137. And you can message the Facebook page, get us on Twitter.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for coming. We feel very honoured to have you on.
Oh, thanks, James.
On a personal note, I've learned a lot from you. You've inspired me to some of the things that you've written, some articles, the way you describe the way you sort of evolved your thinking about looking at your children, the way they were behaving and thinking about your own behavior. Maybe you could be autistic and then getting a diagnosis. That's kind of the route that I've taken as well. So
I was going to ask if you were diagnosed yet.
So I'm sort of on the waiting list, but I'm self-diagnosed. So I'd like to say a big thank you for that. And we hope to have you on again sometime, you know, and hopefully we'll be talking about more of your successes in the future.
Thank you. And good luck with your assessment. Let me know how it goes.
Thank you.
All right.
That's fabulous. Thank you so much, Emma. It's been a real honour having you on.
You're very welcome. All right. Take care, all right? Bye, yeah. James.
Thanks,
Take
Emma.
Care.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Autism Podcast. If you would like to donate to support the podcast and the charity, you can do so by going to our Facebook page, which you can find by searching for London Autism Group Charity on Facebook. Once you're there, you can hit the blue donate button or set up a fundraiser. You can also support us by selecting the London Autism Group charity as your charity of choice on smiles.amazon.co.uk, or you can PayPal us through PayPaling the donation to londonautismgroupcharity@gmail.com. That's londonautismgroupcharity@gmail.com. We really do appreciate any donations that come our way. Our charity is new and small, and we are reliant on funds to run the podcast and to do the many things that we are aspiring to do. Again, we hope you enjoyed listening, and we will see you on the next one.